Okay, so this is a bit like deja vu all over again, because about a year ago, I gave a very similar talk to the Angus Board of Directors. And right after I spoke, Steve and Jason spoke about this great new project that Angus was putting together on reconfiguring all of their indexes. So we thought it would be good for me to kind of start again, because they've kind of gone full circle now and have actually introduced their new indexes. Anyway, so I'm going to talk about pigs, because it's sort of one extreme of index usage in that, as you'll see, it's the only selection criterion that's used for pig selection. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about PIC. It's one of the operating divisions of a company called Genus, and ABS Global is another operating division for that. PIC has a global breeding pyramid based on two nucleus farms that are one in the U.S., one in Canada. They collect a lot of pure line performance information, a lot of genomics, and a lot of commercial crossbred information, as Jeremy outlined this morning. We estimate breeding values for a whole lot of things. We calculate indexes and use pedigree information and feed that into mate selection algorithm to help us determine mating lists that maximize our delta G, but at least minimizes the rate at which you accumulate inbreeding in these closed lines. And yeah, there's a whole lot of data, you know. With pigs, you can collect a whole lot of data. Anyway, as I said before, selection index is the only selection criterion that's used in the selection program. Yes, there is a bit of further selection in terms of feet and legs and conformation. The index that is used is composed of breeding values and economic weightings. EBV just being twice an EPD. Now, also, as Jeremy kind of pointed out under the Smithfield system this morning, a lot of what PIC does is based on male and female lines to mate, to come up with crossbred products, and then use those products as parents to produce market progeny. So because of that, we have very specific specialized sire and dam lines. So the terminal lines and maternal lines. And you can see that they have different breeding objectives. Terminal lines mostly for growth, for carcass, and for grow finish survival and robustness. Maternal lines, the vast majority of selection pressure is on reproduction. But you'll see that there is some small contribution in terms of survival and robustness, in terms of growth, and in terms of carcass traits as well. The other nice thing about pig breeding is that you've got these very well-defined ways of being able to disseminate the genetic improvement that you're making up here. And of course, the genetic improvement flows down the pyramid, and there's some expectation for payment for value going back up the pyramid. This is a really good general point for any sort of genetic improvement in any livestock industry. A beef seed stock producer who wants to invest, say, into measuring feed intake is going to want to have some expectation that the extra cost of utilizing those facilities can be passed down to the bull buyer, but at the same time, the bull buyer wants to be motivated and have confidence that that extra genetic improvement is going to have impact on his or her genetic improvement program. Another important point is there are no sale catalogs when you're buying a boar. Okay? And customers really never see any breeding values. All a customer will see might be an index value. So obviously there's a lot of trust there, but also the way agreements might be written is that over a period of time, every bore I send you is going to have an index value of 150. If I send you a bore that has an index value that's higher than 150, you pay me more for it. If I send you a bore that has an index value of lower than 150, I'll give you credits or pay you for that. Okay? But all the customer sees is an index value. And so pedigrees are just sort of anonymous. I want to take a little bit of a sidetrack here just to talk a little bit about historical perspective before I go into talking about how to estimate those economic weightings that I've talked about. I think Matt Spangler mentioned a paper that I pointed out to him some time ago from 1936, H.F.S. Smith. Bruce, can you give my bottle of water behind you, please? He was a student of Ronald Fisher, the developer of analysis of variance, and his PhD work was on how to identify different cultivars for genetic improvement. He knew that there were a whole lot of traits. Excuse me. He knew that there were a whole lot of traits involved in high genetic merit. He just didn't know what the actual worth of all of those traits were. So he used something that Ronald Fisher developed called the discriminant function, which is basically a multivariate method for classifying different kinds of individuals or plants in this respect. And this was published in the Annals of Eugenics back in 1936. Okay. So next, Hazen and Lush came along in 1942, and this is sort of a seminal paper looking at the differences between tandem selection, independent culling levels, and what was called a total score method at the time. And I thought the wording was kind of interesting from the perspective that the total score method will permit extra merit in one characteristic to offset slight defects in another. And he talks about defects. He talks about inferiority. I really don't like those numbers. Here's five bulls and six different kinds of EPDs, post-weaning gain, marbling score, back fat, carcass weight, ribeye area, and dry matter intake. You know, they're all different, but yet they all have the same index value. The whole idea is that not necessarily they're not inferior, they're not offsetting slight defects. It's simply that animals get to the same place in different ways. I think that's another good reason why index selection is so useful and important in that way. And again, at the time in 1942, Hazen and Lush said, you know, how much importance should we give for each of these traits? The next year, Hazel published his seminal paper on the basis for constructing selection index, and he kind of toned his wording down a bit in saying that, in practice, several or many traits influence an animal's practical value, although they do so in varying degrees. And this was sort of like the beginning of the way that of selection index and the way that we utilize them now. So let's go back and talk a little bit about estimating economic values. One way of doing it is through a profit equation. Profit equals income minus expense. It's a single equation, and it theoretically should describe all of the values and all of the costs involved in producing an animal. And because of the fact that pigs are basically sort of in a controlled environment all the time, you have a good opportunity of being able to identify what all of those costs and values are. Hazel defined an economic value that it depends upon the amount by which profit may be expected to increase for each unit of improvement in that trait. And any of us who took college calculus would know that that's sort of a definition of a derivative. Okay, and the economic value is simply estimated as the first derivative of the profit function, holding everything else constant. So what does a profit function look like? Here's a pig profit function, an easy one. So profit is a function of carcass weight times the value per kilogram plus whatever lean percent is times the value of lean. That next bit here is the pig-related costs. It's a cost, so it's negative. The number of days times the cost per day plus their daily food intake times cost of feed. We also have a cost for the sow. And that sow, that's cost per sow per year, and all of that cost is spread across the number of litters, litter size times litter by litter weight, and litter size at weaning and litter size per year. So that's one kind of straightforward profit equation. We can go ahead and take that and take derivatives of various things. So, for example, if I want to know what the marginal economic value is for lean, I find that that's a function of carcass weight and the value of lean. Or if I want to look at the marginal economic value of days to finish, it is a function of the cost per day plus feed intake times the cost of feed. You also notice that the marginal economic value for days is negative. It's a cost, and it's something that we want to reduce. Now, in an index calculation, if you take an animal that has a negative breeding value for days, and you multiply it by a negative marginal economic value for days, you get a positive number, and that increases your index value. Now, these can get really complex. Here I've added a few other things in terms of growing pig survival or age at first fallowing, litters per sow lifetime. But even I actually did attempt to take derivatives of this thing for a few things some time ago and decided, I kind of went through it. But there are easier ways of doing these things. So another way of being able to do estimate marginal economic values is going through what I call bioeconomic modeling, which basically you're simulating a whole bunch of observations and going in with equations to predict costs and values. It is a straightforward way. You don't have to worry about derivatives. But at the same time, it's good to have access to all the costs and values and so on and understand how the biology works. So basically what you do here, you run the model and at the means and you record the profit per animal. You take one trait and you increase it by some unit. Say I increase days by one day. And then I run my model again. I get another value or profit per animal. I take the difference between those two, and that gives me my marginal economic value. It's in the same spirit of the derivative approach and Hazel's approach, because while we have increased that one trait by one unit, I've held everything else constant. So it still sort of follows those guidelines. So let's go back to pigs now. So I go and collect all this product information and value information for pigs. And this is one of the worksheets that I developed when I was with PIC. And you see the red things are inputs that I put into my model. And green is what I calculate from all those other things. And then, of course, because I have all these derivatives, I know what the structure of the marginal economic value should be. I could have another spreadsheet that has those going on in the background and go ahead and calculate my marginal economic values. So here's an example of a maternal line index. It's got a bunch of traits in it: growth rate, feed intake, back fat, loin depth, leg score, litter size, percent stillborn, pre-weaning survival, and litter weaning weight. And this graph here shows you in standard deviation units what the predicted response by trait is for each of these. Here are the MEVs, the marginal economic values that I calculated for those. And the weighting is what I would use in my index. Now, normally, I would use the MEVs as in my index. I'm going to take the MEV and multiply it by the breeding value and add those all up. But you'll see here that these five traits here are traits of the pig, and these four traits here are traits of the female, of the dam. You'll note here that the MEVs for the females, for the dams, are the same as what the weightings would be, but the MEVs, but the weightings for the pigs, for the pig traits, are half what they are for the ones that I calculated. Why do you think that is? I'll tell you why. Charlie Smith wrote a really great paper in 1964 on the use of specialized siren dam lines for meat production. And his basic thesis was that when you're improving a female line, your breeding objective is composed of reproduction of the female and progeny performance of her piglets. Well, she only provides a random sample half of her DNA to the progeny. So I'm going to go ahead and half what the weighting is going to be on the progeny traits, but keep them whole here on for the dam traits, because they're going to express those directly. This is a very early way of using discounting. Some of you have heard about discounted expressions in genetic improvement programs, because a dose of semen used in males or females, different traits are going to be expressed at different times of the animal's life cycle. You want to try and take that into account. So for a dam line, you have a coefficient of 1 for traits that are expressed in the sows, and 1/2 for traits expressed in the slaughter pigs. That other half comes from the terminal sire. So that's why we have these here. Now, you'll notice here that my example is about a terminal sire, is about a maternal line, but yet we don't seem to have a whole lot of response for the female traits, for the maternal traits, but we've got a lot for the growth traits. Obviously, the growth traits are more highly heritable than some of the reproduction traits and survival traits are. And I know, hopefully we can have some discussion about desired gains, but as I said before, sometimes we've got negative correlations between traits, low heritabilities, or incomplete information on economics and so on. So we can utilize something called desired gains to provide us certain predetermined values or target values in response while maximizing response in other traits. So to me, it's about balancing the emphasis we want to put on those traits within biological limitations. I'm going to say this in a little while as well. Is this optimal? No. It's suboptimal because as you'll end up seeing, I'm going to lose response in some traits at the expense of others. But I still feel that desired gains is very valuable if you keep in mind the biological limitations of the animals you're working with. I wouldn't want to have a response to selection for litter size of 2 pigs per generation. I think that's biologically impossible, but you can do some good things with it. Here, I've added another column here, which I call focus factors. Now, the very first time I showed this, you consider the focus factors all to be 1. Here, I've started playing around with them in an iterative way, so that I could improve the predicted response to selection for the reproductive traits while reducing the expression or the response for traits in the pig. Remember, in a maternal line here, if you remember that that pie chart. The vast majority of emphasis in selection should be on female reproduction and survival, and at a, on a lesser extent to traits that are expressed in the pig. Because remember, we're going to have a terminal sire that's been selected pretty much only on all of that to contribute to the progeny there. So this, to me, is kind of an interesting way, a useful way of using desired gains to achieve response.
Okay, thank you, everybody, particularly everybody that pitched in and helped. That was excellent. I think Marcy may have had a seizure, I think is what the conclusion may have been. So, but it appears she's in good hands, so we'll go ahead and, Scott, if you're up to continuing, please do. Thank you, everybody, again, and we'll try and get refocused a little bit. I'm not sure what you were saying when we stopped, so you might want to back up just a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
I don't mind. I'm on. So I was over here talking about focus factors and playing around with desired gains so I could increase the amount of predicted response in maternal traits and reduce response in traits of the slaughter pigs under the assumption that I'm going to have a terminal sire on top of the female that will help to increased performance here as well. So I basically just put this here to show what desired gains did going from our first attempt, where those focus factors all would have been one, to here where we have a desired gains index. So important point here is that selection decision made here at the nucleus, at a great grandparent, is going to, by the time we get to market progeny, is going to influence about 2,500 pigs, which is a lot. So you want to be sure we get selection right here. And another thing that we don't talk a lot about in beef cattle, but the concept of genetic lag, where we want to try and get that genetic improvement at the nucleus down to the market progeny as quickly as possible. I think it's somewhere on the order of about 2.5 years in this particular situation here. Some of the estimates I've seen in cattle go anywhere from 5 to 7 years. Okay, does it work? Yep, it does work. Here is a, this is good till 2016. I couldn't get one that was later. But you can see here what the response, or at least the genetic trend for index. This is where PIC started genomic selection on all lines, which was around 2012. And you can see here that indexing does work over a five-year average. If you're using PIC on both the male and female side, is about $2.50 per pig. When you're talking about 1 million pigs or something like that coming out of a production system, it's a lot of money. So in closing, this whole concept of selection index is really ubiquitous, really widespread. Plant breeders have been using indexing a lot longer than animal breeders have. These are just screenshots of different research papers that come across my desk. I use Google a lot, and I've got it set up so once or twice a week I'll get a list of new papers having selection index or breeding objective or something like that. So it kind of gives me an opportunity of keeping up what's going on in literature. But the other thing is that the selection index is actually used and mentioned in biomedical. So I know doctors use something called a selection index when they're evaluating patients for transplants. You can use a hybrid multiple criteria decision-making model for selecting the location of women's fitness centers and also a decision-making model for finding a photovoltaic module supplier if you need batteries. So they're used anywhere where you've got some measurement and you're going to put some weighting on it. It's called a selection index. I knew it was only a matter of time before it would happen in sports as well. This came across my desk last week. Construction of the selection index system for high-level basketball players in colleges and universities. This equation here would be surprisingly familiar to those who are familiar with selection index literature. But the interesting thing was the researcher had an example of the index, but he never tells you what's in the index. And you don't know whether the 75 and the 80 and the 90 are the scores from the stuff that he's collecting, or is the 0.09 or the 0.05 or the 0.15 the scores that are supposed to be used. Anyway. So I just thought that was really interesting. I'm sure it's just a matter of time before it happens in baseball and basketball, among others. So I'm going to stop there, and thank you for sticking around.